Backseat Producers, episode number 95, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button and Forrest Gump. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And this is Daryl.
And we are the Backseat Producers. All right, so let's get this stuff out of the way and get this thing going, because I have a feeling this could be a little longish.
What do you mean, because it's 6 hours of movie?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right, so next week we're going to talk about Watchmen.
Finally.
I'm finally going to see it in the next 2 days, so.
I'm aroused over here.
Finally watch it.
I thought about the movie. Oh, crap.
I see the blue glow coming from under the table. All right, so this week we're talking...
Lynn's going to crap her pants.
I guess she's going to have to be here next week, then.
Yeah, she's going to be here next week.
Yeah. All right, so next week, Watchmen. This week we're going to talk about...
Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
And Forrest Gump. Since there are similarities...
Lots.
The first similarity, which I didn't know about, Daryl told me about, was that the screenwriter is
screenwriter,
the same for both.
Eric Groth wrote both Benjamin Button and Forrest Gump.
That makes... There's so much that makes sense about that once you get into it.
Even though the original story by F. Scott Fitzgerald is very loosely based on Benjamin Button, that of the movie.
Really?
Yeah. The only thing that they took from the Fitzgerald story was the fact that Benjamin moves backwards in time, or ages backwards, and they use that as the hook to build the Benjamin Button story. Fitzgerald wrote the story set in the 1860s.
Well, I have to blame Fitzgerald for The Great Gatsby, which was god awful. Oh my god, I hate that book. What is going on with this?
Damn monitor.
That seemed to have done it.
It's not too early for Run, Tony, Run. Thank you. We're getting there quickly.
Yeah, he's pretty trashed already.
No, he's talking about Run, Forrest, Run from Forrest Gump.
Oh.
Run, Forrest, Run.
I was just talking about you having consumed them.
Almost. I almost finished one bottle. Of whiskey. granted, there wasn't that much in the bottle to start with, so let me preface that.
A couple of fingers, so don't worry, folks.
It's not like his liver's not drinking mook amounts of whiskey over
his
here.
His liver's not going to fall out of his chest.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
All right.
Okay.
So let's start this off.
Which movie do you want to start with first?
Let's start with Forrest Gump. It's the one that's probably more people have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin Button's newer. Not as many people have had a chance to see it. Why don't we just split it up? We'll talk about Forrest Gump, take a break, talk about Benjamin Button, and then do a little bit of comparison.
We're going to spoil Forrest Gump then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the movie's...
Well, 94, so I think we've all seen it by now.
15 years old.
All
right.
Excuse me.
I'll change it to drink, Tony, drink.
Very good. That worked for me.
Okay, so Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. The story is that there's a boy born to a mother who runs a
boarding house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to want for much,
mm-hmm.
but mom apparently has to perform some tasks from time to time that are a little.
Mom does what needs to be done,
and really that's not even a financial concern. It was really. For Forrest's sake to get into school. Forrest is slow. Probably would have been classified as developmentally disabled under modern terms. The character in general has an amazing capacity for hope, but it starts off on the slow end of things.
He ends up on the slow end of things.
Yeah, he stays really on the slow end of things throughout.
But he's the only steady character in the whole story. Everybody else swirls around him, and he just maintains this steady pace.
Yeah,
and eventually ends up coming out on pretty much the top, or at least life, the opportunities keep coming to him, and he keeps taking advantage of them while everybody else is more or less just oblivious to it.
Right, right. real high level, what'd you think of the movie?
I enjoyed the movie, but I like really long, epic plot lines that span long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like 25, 30 years.
So you liked it for that aspect of it?
Okay. I like it because it's a whole story.
Yeah.
It's not just like the piece of some larger scheme.
Okay.
So I enjoyed it.
Daryl?
Ready too. I mean, it's an epic film. I mean, you can enjoy it on a whole bunch of different levels.
Right.
So just from the Horatio Alger aspect, you know, man with pure heart does good. Or you can be looking at the other end. It's a walk through history.
Right. Right, because it does walk through
a lot of history.
Pretty much the 70s through the 50s. I was going to say, yeah, the 50s through
the late 90s, well, up to the 90s.
Up through the 90s, yeah, up to the mid 90s. The thing that I really liked about it was just the character and how, regardless of everything else, he was just very hopeful. There was nothing dissuaded him. There were times that he was off track from how things were going, and they did it really heavy-handedly in the movie. But, I mean, for effect, the character himself really wasn't one for subtlety. But I liked it because it was a hopeful character.
And there's a lot of subtle comedy in there, too.
Yeah, oh, there's a lot of subtle comedy in there.
It's a lot of dark humor.
Oh yeah,
because of the way that, I mean, that they play, they make him the joke in a lot of the situations. Like he's sitting in the park bench with the black woman, and he's telling her how he's named for one of the leaders of the Klan.
Yeah,
and she's just looking horrified at him. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, well, and that's sprinkled throughout the movie. I mean, yeah. From him running at every situation, and not because he's afraid, but because that's what he thinks he's supposed to do, to things like, you know, meeting, was it when he met the president, when he said he had to pee?
He had to pee.
It was like,
well, he meets the president a couple times.
Yeah.
The other time he's like, oh, so you got shot in the ass. He drops his pants. He's like, yep, look, there it is. There's my ass.
All the historical walk-ons are kind of interesting, too. And then one thing in the chat room there said, wasn't it this film like technically groundbreaking?
It was. Yeah.
I mean, to do all that morphing and the film editing to insert the archival footage in there and make it look like it belonged there rather than just being like just
it didn't look like reshot. It didn't look like a bad Photoshop job.
Mm-hmm.
No,
it looked good.
And it still looks good even today, yeah, when you watch it. I mean, that's just how technically good the film work was. I mean, when you can outlive your special effects, that's a pretty much a sign of, you know, the quality.
Mm-hmm. And this is another thing that I liked about this movie, and this actually holds true in Benjamin Button as well, is that I didn't think that there was there's a lot of historical depth to it. Like the situations he's in are, they have their niche in history, but it's not one of those movies that, it's not a movie like, what the hell movie did we do the first week? Frost, Nixon, or Milk. Right. Where you sit down and you analyze what's going on or anything like that.
And he doesn't necessarily affect history in too many places. Because he does. He does affect history a couple of times. The first being when he meets Elvis. Mm-hmm. And he does his dance with his braces on. And the Elvis, I mean, you never know that it's Elvis until they say it later. But he said, you know, something like, hey, what's that crazy dance you're doing? And the dance he does is very similar to the dance that Elvis was made famous for on some of his early appearances. So he does actually affect history, but it's not in really heavy-handed ways.
No. Which
it's,
I enjoy.
It's fairly subtle, and it's for humorous effect.
Yeah.
It's not like he saves people that don't get saved. I mean, it almost like he just happens to be there and be a touch point in history that pushes a moment in history along.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the little subtle effects there they used, or touchstones they used in the beginning and the end of the film, where he picks up the feather and he puts it in his book, and at the end we see the feather floating off, you know, blown by the breeze. It was kind of a metaphor. He was a feather on the winds of time,
right,
being forever being blown from one event to the other.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, there's not... The movie wasn't that deep. It's...
No, the movie wasn't that deep, but
it's a plot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a statement, it's a plot. And I'm fine with that. I like those
movies. I think, actually, some of the side characters are far more interesting.
Holy crap, Gary Sinise is awesome. Jesus Christ, Gary Sinise is awesome.
Yes, Lieutenant
Dan. That man is brilliant.
Most of the side characters are really interesting.
Jenny annoyed me.
Jenny
was annoying. Oh, crap.
I don't disagree with that. But I liked Bubba, too. Bubba Boudry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Bubba.
Yeah. Well, I was like, Bubba. I know that guy is in the movie. I just don't remember who he is.
I mean, that's where he gets the shrimp Bubba boat. Gump,
yeah.
Shrimp boat.
Be a shrimp boat captain.
Yeah. Somebody your shrimp soda, shrimp salad.
Shrimp
soup. Shrimp stew.
You're killing me, Tony. Ass, what are you doing? Holy crap, Bud Light, Gene, what are you doing? It burns.
All right.
Drink Bud Light because it doesn't burn.
Another thing that one of the other big special effects they used in this movie was with Gary Sinise,
his
legs. And I remember seeing at the time even like some of the HBO first look kind of stuff that they, you know, always play. Mm-hmm. And how they pulled off some of those scenes with him not having legs. And there's scenes with like him swinging his stumps into and out of the boat. And when they shot that scene, they actually shot him wearing green leggings so that they could just mat it out. But the boat, if I'm remembering this right, the boat actually had a cutout for his feet, so when he swung his legs around, his legs just swung into this gap in the deck, so that when he spun himself around, it looked like he was just pivoting on his hands and his ass, and his legs weren't there.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, little stuff like that, and then they just come in with the computer and fix it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this was stuff that you didn't really see in other movies. They would have just had him have a towel over his legs.
Yeah.
They would have done it like...
Or built a ramp for his wheelchair to go up or something.
Yeah, they would have done something TV sitcom-ish where, like we were talking earlier, they tried to hide a pregnant woman's stomach.
Yeah.
If the character's
she's always
not
sitting
pregnant.
Down or she's wearing really baggy clothes, yeah, or she's like up at the table with her gut underneath it. Come on.
Cut out.
Yep.
Or standing behind a globe. Let's see, some of the... one of the other things to note about the characters and the actors, Haley Joel Osment.
Who?
Haley Joel Osment. The kid from Sixth Sense.
Yeah, I know who we're talking about. Who was he in the movie?
He was Forrest. Little Forrest. At the end of the movie.
Forrest Jr.
Oh!
Yeah.
By this point in the movie, I was like 3 hours in, I was like, oh, all right, there's the kid. Roll the credits. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, and that's Forrest Jr.
Hmm. Did Forrest know that he saw dead people?
He probably found that out later.
That might freak him out.
Forrest, I can see being really freaked out by that. Hmm. I wonder if he saw his dead mother.
Ooh.
When Jenny died.
Oh. She dies? Thanks for ruining the movie, Tony.
It's been a while since you've seen this film. I can see that.
What about the religious viewpoint of view from Captain Dan? Captain Dan is an awesome guy just in general. That whole scene on the boat where he's like, he's challenging God. That was awesome.
Yeah, sitting up in the crow's nest in the middle of a hurricane, daring God to hit him with a lightning bolt.
And I want to talk a little bit about what Aaron has said here. It was a terrible, terrible book. I didn't read the book. I listened to the book on tape of both that book and the sequel.
Bunk Dump Company.
Oh, my God. I don't understand how they made this movie from that book. It has got to be, without question, the most... The only time I can think of where a book has been that bad and the movie has been that good.
Well, actually,
it wasn't a little improvement. It was a night and day improvement. The book was unreadable. I mean, the character Forrest Gump was slow, but was just mean-spirited.
Well, in the book, I think, if I remember correctly, he was more of a savant than just mildly retarded. I mean, they made him into a guy who could do physics, but couldn't hold a conversation.
Yeah, and like the second book, and what's weird is to get the stories from both of the movie, you actually have to look at both books, because the one book stops real early, as far as you know in the course of where the movie went, and the second book is where it kind of went through the late 70s, 80s, 90s. Wow. But, I mean, he was doing stuff like he was in the space shuttle. I mean, it was just like, how do you even get this movie from that book? It was unbelievable.
Well, that's the genius of the screenwriter, to be able to take those concepts and actually make them into something filmable and watchable.
He had his own idea for what this should have been. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he basically took the high-level concepts of the book and completely wrote something based on conceptually what the book was about, not actually what the book was about.
Rib, why do you bring up Dark Tower? Come on. I thought we'd been through this. I don't know. I think it's cool when you can take the source material and then you can make it better. Like, enrich it with a movie. But that doesn't often happen.
You know, excuse me, I don't have a problem with books to movies. One of the things that I find...
Except for Count of Monte Cristo, that was not...
That was bad. I don't have a problem when they make changes, as long as the changes make sense for the medium that you're putting the story into, and as long as the story you're telling is true within itself.
The same spirit.
Yeah. Well, you know, mostly the same spirit. I didn't really have a problem with what they did in X-Men 1 and 2 over what the comic books were.
Yeah, I was fine with it. Well... I'm lucky that you restricted that to 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Three was just a nightmare.
I didn't say three.
Was a nightmare.
But three, they went, tried to go more back to the source material. And they tried to put too much of the source material into a movie.
No, they tried to go back to the source material, and then we're like, you know what, this isn't going to work. We can make this better. And it's like, well, why go back to it if you're just going to change it? Why just not do something different?
Let's see.
Novel adaptations of movies are worse. Honestly, I don't think that I can even come up with a novel adaptation of a movie to talk about.
Well, again, it all depends on the screenwriter.
There are quite a few. And actually, I've heard some really good things about the novel adaptations of Star Wars episodes 1 through 3.
Whoa. I could not read Wrath of Khan.
Star Wars. Oh. What are you talking about? Red alert.
I don't think I could read that terrible romance between Anakin and Padme.
Apparently, in the book, it was better. Because it was a different,
was terrible.
different source.
Well, you have time to sit there and flesh out the story a lot better.
Right.
Some guy got drunk at the movies, and he's like, oh, God, let's cut out the bad parts. Holy crap, let's juice this up with some hardcore sex or something. Jesus.
Well, there was
a beer.
I didn't do anything to your beer.
Well, that's it. Have you ever seen a thing out there called the Phantom Edit, where somebody took Phantom Menace and re-edited it back into something watchable?
I've
seen the
Adam
Edit of the second one. What the hell is that? Clone Wars?
Clone Wars.
Yeah. You just chapter skip every time Padme and Anakin come on the screen. So basically, you're just watching Anakin roam around with his lightsaber and kill people. It's awesome.
Obi-Wan?
Yeah. God damn. Look at this.
You get some whiskey with that beer?
Two beers. I'm drunk. I'm coughing. I'm hacking. Jesus.
All right.
Do some Boilermakers.
Yeah, no kidding, man. It's an Irish car bomb. Come on, Tony.
I don't need Guinness.
Those things are gross anyway. Don't worry.
All right. So, that's pretty much...
I'm all over the place tonight, dude.
Yeah. All right, whatever. Okay. Forrest Gump, we're done. I mean, there's really not much more to talk about.
There's
a lot of little things. Tom Hanks's performance as the character...
Was great.
He followed through. The character was great. The story was wonderful. Sally Field did an amazing job playing his mom.
I don't even know who that is.
Sally Field?
No. Just move, keep going.
Anyway, his mom in the movie. Gary Sinise, fantastic. We talked about that already.
I love Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise was... I think that was the movie where I really noticed him. A lot of people probably really noticed him in that movie.
I read The Stand when I was in grade school. Love that book. It's on my top five books of all time.
What does that have to do with Gary Sinise?
He played the main character in the movie adaptation, like the 8-hour TV miniseries, which I owned and is awesome.
Did that come out after this?
No, before.
Did it really?
I remember.
It was around the same time, because I was still in grade school when it came out, because it was like 2 hours every night
came out
week.
In 94.
I was 11 in 94. Was it probably? Yeah, it may come out before then, though, yeah.
For me, this is kind of interesting, because I was living in Alabama, Montgomery, at the time when this movie came out, and believe me, they ate this stuff up.
Oh, Forrest Gump? Oh, yes. He was all about Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, this
Alabama!
Was like...
Alabama!
This was like... This is a movie that finally treats Alabama like it's a part of the USA.
Yeah.
That's funny.
One of the interesting points in the movie was one of the things that his mama told him, and specifically when it came to the Vietnam War, things ever get rough, you just run. Just get out and just run. Well, it got to a point later in the movie, later in his life, things were going badly for him, mm-hmm. and he just ran. And that's the scene. And at first, the first time I saw the movie, I was like, what the hell is this? Why in the hell is he running from coast to coast, and why do I care about it, other than the fact that they can throw a little bit of 80s trivial humor into this?
Smiley face.
The smiley face, shit happens, you know, that kind of stuff. I really didn't think much of it until later on when I the second or third time I saw the movie, and it was like, it all clicked. It was like, that was his only escape. That was the only thing he knew how to do, because that was all his mama told him how to do. He really didn't know much other than the stuff that was put in front of him, black and white.
Mm-hmm. There was also a chance for the cinematographer to go nuts in some places.
They did some really good stuff on a wide screen.
That those outdoor scenes while he's running are just awesome.
Yeah,
and a lot of the movie itself is, in terms of quality, blows a lot of the stuff that was contemporary for the time away. I mean, that is a pretty movie.
Yes, it is.
It's well shot, well everything. The production values on that just blew away a lot of what else was out.
You might say this was also the point at which Tom Hanks' career started really taking off.
Yeah, I mean, people started was golden.
He did Philadelphia before this, didn't he?
Philadelphia Story.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But he wasn't really... I mean, this is the one that sort of has put him into the A-list actors.
Philadelphia was a great movie and was treated respectfully in the film community. I think the mainstream population at that time couldn't handle it.
No, that was way too early.
It was AIDS and it was gay and...
He got an award for it, which he deserved, but
absolutely.
It didn't land him any other jobs. This is the gig he had that landed him other jobs.
I would venture that Philadelphia may have landed him this job, though.
Well, probably.
Well, considering John Travolta was originally slated to do Forrest's part, but Travolta turned it down, which he later regrets as one of his big mistakes.
I can't imagine. I really cannot imagine John Travolta in this role.
Yeah, you got to remember, Travolta's career was still was not on the downslide at this point.
You know what's weird about John Travolta, though, is his everybody says he's had comebacks, but if you look at him, he's never really been
out.
Right. I mean, he really hasn't.
He just has lulls and highs.
Yeah, he's made movies. He's made bad movies, but he's never really been out. Face Off
is a great movie.
No disagreement at all.
So is Swordfish.
Battlefield Earth, not.
We don't talk about that movie.
Then he redeems himself with Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction was fantastic.
Phil went to see Battlefield Earth, came into work later that day, collapsed, had a seizure. This is a true story.
Oh my
Battlefield
God.
Earth gave him a seizure. It was that bad. He claims it wasn't Battlefield Earth, but it was Battlefield Earth.
It very well could be.
So, Forrest Gump, I don't know. Stuff happens. We have to
kind of touch on Forrest Gump just because it's going to come up when we talk about
Benjamin Button. I'm already thinking about it.
I felt the need already. So, all right. Let's go ahead and take a little break right here, and then we'll come back and talk about Benjamin Button and maybe some of the comparisons between the two movies.
I'll gyrate provocatively in my seat.
All right, you do that and cough on your beer a little more, too, while you're
at it. I don't know what happened with it. It was not good.
Is this your idea of Christian music? Yeah, me neither. Let's try a little head noise.
Invest your money, run rat race. You've got two blinds in your face. Less from all you love taste.
So tune in to JT's Indie Christian Music Podcast at www.jtindie.com.
We're back.
Benjamin Button time.
Benjamin Button. The Curious Case.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. I gotta tell you. This movie showed up in the middle of the movie marathon.
Yes.
And it was long.
Yes, it was long.
Oh. I mean, that was midway through the movie, long. I was like, oh, we're only halfway through.
Yeah, it was weird. What's weird is even if you're not watching the time and you know how long the movie is, you can kind of tell how long the movie is.
Yeah.
Because there is the ticking clock aspect of it. You know he's aging in reverse. So you know he's going to end up young, unless he dies unnaturally some way. But they also do the. Well, let's start over. Let's go back to the beginning. High level. What did you think of the movie?
I enjoyed the movie for the same reasons I enjoyed Forrest Gump. That's all I got to say.
Daryl,
you can enjoy it, but I felt it was a little derivative. I mean, they kind of telegraph just about all the events that are going to happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it to a point. And then there was one point in the movie where the character did something that I absolutely despised. The main character did something that I absolutely despised, and it really...
Wait a minute.
...took me out of the movie because it didn't make any sense for why that had to happen. And I think you probably know where I'm headed with this.
I hate when this happens in things in general. I have to do this.
And it really
didn't. Why would you have to do that?
It didn't make any sense why he had to do that thing.
Okay. All right.
But anyway, we'll get there. We will get there.
I thought it was more cleverly told than Forrest Gump.
You thought it was more cleverly told than Forrest Gump?
I'm a sucker for the diary and the memory and the flashback.
And they did a couple of different. They had a couple of different hooks with that. They had. Okay, so the story starts by telling a story.
Yep.
It's the story of the clock that runs backwards.
Yep.
And
blah, blah, blah. Guy's son goes off to World War One.
Yes. Which is, they make you think in the trailers that the scene where the people are running backwards in World War One has something to do with the plot of the movie.
Doesn't.
It doesn't have a damn thing. It happens like almost like during the credits.
Yeah.
When they're telling this backstory about the clock that runs backwards.
Really, and the clock has nothing to do with the story either, other than the fact that it runs backwards.
Well, it just anchors.
Well, and it anchors it the beginning and the end. It's the feather.
Yeah.
It's the feather that was in Forrest Gump.
All right, the feather
again,
clock.
Again, it's one more comparison between the two movies.
Okay.
That we haven't started discussing. But let me tell you, that's from here on, this is going to be the kickoff. The feather in Forrest Gump is the clock running backwards in this movie.
Okay, so the movie starts out with
Well, it's Daisy who's been Benjamin's
Jenny.
No, Jenny. Well, it's the love of his life.
It's his Jenny.
Yeah, it's his Jenny. She's in her 80s. She's dying in a hospital room, and the scene is set that Hurricane Katrina is coming in fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of one of the little urgencies they put into the movie is. It starts out that it's a sunny day and then the storm is way far off and it's not going to hit New Orleans and then
right.
time and the all the way through it's getting closer and closer.
The recurring theme of the movie is time is running out.
Right.
And the weather
for everybody.
Reports,
yeah.
And the weather reports are on the news and the hurricane's coming. Oh no, wait, it's changed direction, so it's not going to hit us. Oh wait, no, it's changing directions again. Which. Anybody who lived through that remembers, even where we are in the Midwest, we were watching those things because we didn't know what the hell was going to happen. And they just kept saying it was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We knew something bad was going to happen here. I mean, not to us, but...
And that's kind of
states away.
Things got real bad.
Yeah, things got real bad real quick.
Yeah, well, to pick it up again, Daisy's sitting there and she's talking to her daughter and she's... He tells her to pick up this diary that was written by her father.
Yes.
And it would, because the kid has never met her father. Well, he has, but she doesn't
really. She's not aware of that.
She's not really aware of it at this point. And she starts reading these sections out of it, and that's kind of where our movie kind of picks up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And throwing in some of the commentary from Daisy in her dying delirium. There.
This movie was like it cribbed from itself in Forrest Gump from the screenwriter, but it also cribbed a little bit from Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
The old lady who comes back to tell the story about her boyfriend,
Let's not do Titanic.
Yeah, it's again told through the flash kind of like all flashbacks.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But you got a problem with Titanic?
I do.
Boat sinks. Ooh, I spoiled it!
You see What's-Her-Face's breasts. Really the only thing I was interested in.
And we saw a lot more of them and more of her in the Reader. Which you refuse to talk about. So what, you got a problem with her?
Well, the Reader, she's old.
I get belligerent.
The Reader, she's 15 years older.
Still looks pretty good.
Oh, I don't know about that.
She can put on a few more pounds.
Whoa. I definitely don't agree with that. All right.
Oh, she had more pounds on her in Titanic than she did in The Reader.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, when she was younger, she was tighter.
Mm,
she carried it better. Right. I got the ninja eye for this stuff. Dude, don't. We'll do a side by. I'll send you screenshots tomorrow. Right. Don't think I got anything better to do. Back.
Please do. I got free time right now.
We're getting back for a show again.
Anyway.
Very important, Daryl. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
We're talking about Kate Winslet's breasts here. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
This is priorities. The most important part of the episode right
here. This may be the most important thing we've ever done.
Yes. Priorities must be set.
All right.
So, the opening scene is, ta-da, Benjamin Button's birth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first flashback-ish thing that we get, mm-hmm. aside from the intro about the clock.
Right.
And...
One of the best characters, introduction to one of the best characters in the movie, the woman who becomes his mom.
Mm-hmm. Queenie, yeah.
Queenie. Fantastic actress, fantastic character.
Yeah, she was awesome.
She was incredible. And
toward
the end of the movie, I looked forward to every time she came on the screen. Every time she came on the screen, it was fun. And she gave you something new.
Yeah.
And you just appreciated her more and more. She felt very mom-like, even later in the movie when she's like, "Hey, baby," and it was like, "Yeah," you know.
Side note: his adoptive father, Marsh Ali,
yeah,
that guy,
a tizzy, yeah,
4400, love that guy. It's a damn shame that show was canceled. It's one of the best shows on television.
Yeah. So Benjamin gets left at the retirement home and is found by Tizzy and Queenie. Mm-hmm. And Queenie, of course, is finding out she can't have children. And she still wants to start a family. But along comes, Benjamin here.
Right.
Who looks like he's about 1,000 years old.
He looks ancient and gnarled.
Well, and he was also... this was one of the things that... it's getting a little spoilery because it does affect the end of the movie. This is one of the things that I was confused about, in that he started off small like a baby. Which, okay, I can understand. A normal human woman is not going to give birth to an adult. Okay, granted, she died during childbirth.
This is one of those situations where
you
don't ask.
It bugged me. Because they took all the point.
Time? This.
You know what? They established that, but why did he have to become small at the end? And why did he have to become a baby at the end?
To creep people out?
Well, it's just...
With the scar.
It dovetails.
No, with the old woman. And
well, that was a little weird.
That was very weird.
All right, so...
Is he Merlin? Kind of.
Oh, my God. That changes the story completely.
He's an old man, and his parents are running an old folks home. A retirement home. So he's just one more old guy in the mix. Which was hilarious.
It was hilarious, and it actually made sense for the whole course of the movie, because, one, he could have just been a senile old man instead of an infant in the body of an adult. Because eventually he grows a little bigger, but he just looks like a gnarled old man.
Yeah.
At the age of...
And nobody expects him to live very long.
Right.
Yeah, so that's kind of the running joke.
Plus, they're in a nursing home. So those people aren't living real long either. So nobody's
asking
really
questions.
Questioning that he's getting younger.
Because they never see the changes.
They never see the changes because, you know, and they even make mention that, you know, every few years we get new people and, you know, people are constantly
rotating
out. Because they're dying off. So, you know, if they're there for 5 years, they see him age backwards for 5 years. 5 years really isn't that much
of a... Yeah, between 80 and 75, there's not a whole lot of difference there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's only when he starts, you know, getting into his 50s that you really start to see it.
But even then, by the time he gets to that point, he's out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's moved on.
Well, that's where he meets up with Captain Mike on the docks.
Well, before that, though, he meets...
the girl. What the hell's her name?
What's her name?
Jenny?
No, it's...
That's what I kept saying. Jenny's is from Forrest Gump.
Daisy. Yeah, he meets up with Daisy.
This was
the grandchild of one of the residents who lives there.
This is also another creepy scene.
That was a little weird. Where...
You knew that there were going to be two, though.
Right. I mean, it had to happen.
It's like a 70-year-old man prancing around with that 11-year-old girl, and you're like... Whoa!
Yeah, it's a little
except
bit creepy.
Except for one thing, he isn't 70.
Well,
he's 10.
Yeah, but he looks 70. That's.
What did you think of the special effects? Because this is really where the special effects came into play. There was somebody there playing the role, and they digitally imposed
Brad Pitt's face.
Or on,
his,
on that
his
person.
Aged
his
face.
Aged face.
Yeah, they had to age him first, then they had to take that face mask out. And then digitally compose it back into
I thought
the model.
The effects were okay. But
I thought they were serviceable. I didn't have a problem with them. They didn't detract from anything for me. I mean...
It just looked creepy. It didn't look... It looked
The concept fake. Is kind of creepy.
It was the concept is kind of creepy.
So I was okay with that.
It looked really fakey, though. I mean, it just
It looked pretty fake, yeah, but... It didn't detract.
I wasn't impressed with the special effects.
I wasn't impressed.
Not the same way that I was impressed with Forrest Gump's effects.
Right. For the side, they probably could have done better.
Yeah. The fun thing is, though, the special effects are all at the front of the movie. By the time he's aging up into the point where he's starting turning to an adult, that's where the special effects start to taper off.
Right.
Until
the end when they actually they do a couple of little things to him to make him look a little bit younger.
Well, they just get until the point where they have to get a younger actor to fill out the remaining years of his life.
No, Brad Pitt did look really young in some of those scenes.
Yeah.
Weird, like 15 years ago. Holy crap, that's Brad Pitt from 15 years ago.
Well, and they have a lot of good source material to go back to look at how he looked. So it's not like they had to make up
It too hard. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they could go back and look at stuff like Thelma and Louise and see exactly how he looked then and probably take, you know, captures from some of that stuff to model the face on him.
I don't know.
Well, he was born in around 1914.
Right.
He lived up until about the 2000, right?
Yeah.
That sounds
Well, no, excuse
right.
me, 2000, well, a little before 2000. Well, around
whenever Katrina was 2005.
Well, no, because Daisy was in her 80s by that time, and he had died when she, I think, was in her 60s. So he lived up until around the mid 90s or so.
Yeah, I don't think he hit the millennium.
No,
he probably died in 1994 when Forrest Gump was released.
Yeah,
you're still snarky when you're drunk.
All right.
So, at some point here, he meets up with a tugboat captain.
Yes,
Captain Mike.
This guy was awesome. This guy was the best character of this movie.
Captain Mike. Captain Dan.
Lieutenant Dan.
Same dude. Oh,
Lieutenant Dan.
Yes. Same dude. Yes, but
It was a role reversal backwards in time because this guy started off as a captain and then became man of the army.
Yep.
And Dan was a man of the army and became a captain. Boom. Backwards. That was the twist. It's backwards.
It's crazy how much of this stuff is like. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but you have a mother who was single, because at the mm-hmm. beginning of the movie, she right. was single. When she accepted him and took him in, she was right. single. And she didn't actually marry
Tizzy. Yeah. They agreed. They were more or less living together. They were planning on getting married.
They were like common law almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were a couple that everybody knew was a couple, and they were together. Mm-hmm. So there was no question about them being together. But they didn't really have the sense of being married.
Well, it's never brought out in the movie that it's mentioned.
Well, they have a child together. Mm-hmm. And then he dies.
Yeah.
So.
But before that happens, Benjamin Button travels the world on a tugboat.
Well, and he actually, before that even, he meets his father.
Right. Button Sr., yeah.
Oh, yeah, right before he leaves.
Right.
He meets his birth father.
Right.
One of the things that. He doesn't know it then, though.
He doesn't, but his father knows
who he is.
Who Benjamin is.
Yeah. They meet at a whorehouse. It's awesome.
Well, that's just it.
He takes him to the whorehouse.
Well, that's just it. Captain Mike takes him to him.
Captain Mike takes him, and then they meet up there.
And they meet up in the body house.
He's like, holy crap, you're my son.
Well, he recognizes who he is, even though he doesn't tell Benjamin that until much, much later.
Jeff in the chat room, life is like a bunch of old people.
And it was, apparently.
All right, so
after the whorehouse meeting his father, he goes off, and the tugboat travels the world. Well, as they're out cruising, doing their thing, they end up in Russia.
Murmansk, Russia.
Yeah, so Russia. He meets up with, like, he's staying in a hotel, he meets up with Elizabeth. Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
And I don't even understand why she was in the movie, but like she got this radar from zeroing in on movies that are going to get nominated.
She does have that. She's got... Her agent is phenomenal. Seriously.
She's one weird-looking chick, too.
She does look odd, but she looked pretty good in this movie.
Did you see Constantine?
No.
Gabriel in Constantine. It's just a very weird-looking thing.
That sounds... I saw the movie, but I only kind of halfway watched it.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
It was all right.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Benjamin, when he's in Murmansk with... Captain Mike and the crew, they meet up with this English ambassador and his wife Elizabeth. Really, they have a sort of like an understanding. I mean,
by understanding you mean intercourse?
Well, no. They were at first an open marriage.
You mean between him and her?
Yeah, she would go off and she could, have her dalliance with Benjamin, and as long as it wasn't too. Public, he right. really didn't care very
much. And at the beginning, it was just very...
Friendly.
Right.
And platonic. Because, I mean, he was still a kid. I mean, emotionally.
But he looked 60.
He looked 60, but he was 20. If that. And she was not 20. I mean, she was...
In her late 40s.
She was, in her late 40s, maybe even early 50s.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, a loveless marriage,
looked,
too.
He looked older... But seemed more innocent than her, mm-hmm. which was probably what attracted her in the first place.
Right.
Because he wasn't making the play for her that a 20-year-old wouldn't be making a play for a 50-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm. I was... As soon as she's like, I tried to swim the English Channel once, but didn't. I gave up 90% of the way there or whatever. I was like, ugh, I know this is going to be on a TV screen later in the movie. Don't worry, I was right.
Yeah.
Then there's another one of the Forrest Gump effect too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The light touches to history. Yeah.
Yeah. So they have this affair, I mean, it becomes an affair. It goes from something innocent, becomes an affair. And then one day she's just gone.
Well, that's the day that Pearl Harbor and the war is happening.
Well, they don't know that right then.
Well, he finds out about it the next morning.
Later.
Yeah. But yeah, she suddenly just disappears.
She's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then when World War II happens.
And at this time, he has also written to Daisy and told her that he's met somebody.
Right. He's been sending a continuous stream of postcards back from wherever
she's
he is.
She's still only like 15 at this point.
Right.
So well, I don't know what that... I don't get a sense from this point in the movie. Like, she seems a lot more upset about this than she should be. Like, they've hung out, but... Okay, it's not like they cemented this lifelong relationship
right.
or anything. So,
well, so she still doesn't realize just how fast he's aging backwards and how fast she's aging forward. They're still thinking of each other in more or less...
and really, that probably puts him at younger than 20. It probably does put him more like at 15. Because they do kind of establish them as being about the same age.
Right, they're about the same age.
Which was nice because you could always kind of tell how old he was supposed to be by how old she really was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was nice to have...
They bookend
that,
each other, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
To know... Because sometimes you get a sense and you lose kind of a sense of how old mentally and emotionally is he. And at 15, it even makes even more sense why it would have started much more innocently than
right, he isn't carrying any baggage around at
right.
all.
Because his only real relationships have been with the old people who die
mm-hmm.
and with his one experience with a prostitute.
Well, there was many more experiences after that. But yeah,
his sexual and romantic, and they weren't romantic.
Well, his sexual education has been mostly with prostitutes and whatnot.
Right.
So,
whores. So, World War II happens, and Captain Mike and the crew get called up to help in the...
they're conscripted.
Yeah. As it were. To help in the Pacific Theater.
Well, no, they're in the Atlantic.
Well, they're in the Atlantic, but they go to the Pacific, don't they?
No, they end up in the Atlantic. They're making the convoy runs between Murmansk and New Brunswick.
Where's Murmansk at?
It's up in the... it's the one of the most northern ports up in Russia, if you sail up above the Arctic Circle.
So it's on the European side.
Right.
Okay.
You sail above the Arctic, you sail around Greenland and you turn north instead of keep going east. You
gotcha.
Sail up into Murmansk instead of hitting Great Britain.
I see. All right.
So they do their convoy escorting duty.
Stingray is absolutely right.
I need to just clip you that out. Horse. And so, I mean, they do their convoy duty. They do it for a long time before anything significant happens.
Right.
Like, years, I want to say.
Well, it couldn't be years. It was some months anyway. But they
it was a period
but
of time.
Eventually they do their convoy gets jumped by a U-boat, and they're the only thing out there that has a gun.
This was awesome. This is why Captain Mike was awesome. Hey, we have like one gun, and there's that U-boat. Let's ram it.
Let's attack it. Yes.
What? Okay. sounds fine to me. And so everybody else on the boat, except for maybe two guys and Benjamin Button, bite it. But they sink the U-boat.
Well, they ram it good, and that's the point. You know, we lose Captain Mike and most of the crew, and Benjamin and the other survivor are the only
tale. Even the other characters on the boat were interesting. They were different, weird, interesting little characters. They weren't just cardboard cutouts. They all had their own little personalities that the ones that died came to an interesting end considering where they started from.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not probably worth talking about here, but it is worth noting when you watch the film or if you rewatch the film to just pay attention to those little characters because I think it was kind
of
cool.
Yeah, one of the little sidebar was that Captain Mike was a frustrated art student and he couldn't paint, so he got tattoos. He had artistic tattoos over various parts of his body.
Yeah, that guy was awesome.
All right, so.
So I think it's at this point that he leaves. Like, they're sent home the war ends or something.
Well, they're sent home, yeah. They get picked up
by another boat. And they don't have a ship, and they're not seamen, so.
Yeah, so they end up back in New Orleans. Well, he ends up, I think, back... Well, they all end up back in New Orleans, or he does, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And that's where him and Daisy kind of
meet up again.
And now they're... She's beginning to notice that, boy, he's really changed. And
now he's,
he has, too.
He's gone home. He's gone home, and he's met his younger sister.
Mm-hmm. That scene was awesome with the mom.
Yeah.
I don't remember what she said, but it was so damn funny.
Everything she said was great.
Get out back. You don't know shit. I don't know what the hell it was, but it was so funny.
All right, so...
So at this point, this is when the real romance between Daisy and him starts.
Because he's really starting to get to an age...
Where he understands...
Where he understands love and he understands romance. And she's getting of the age where she's kind of... They're kind of reaching that, you know, late teens, early 20s...
In the
mental,
40s
emotional thing. Age. Yeah. Not physical, because he's much older than that.
Right.
And it's in the... Yeah, it's probably the mid-40s by at this point.
Yeah, it's got to be.
So, where are we at?
She wants to hook it up. He doesn't. I don't even know what. She's like, hey, let's go do it. He's like, no. It's okay. What?
Yeah, we don't. I don't have to do it. I've done had enough of that.
Yeah, I don't know. And that whole scene was just very awkward. It's like,
what? Yeah. This part of the movie I'm actually kind of foggy on.
Is it the movie or is it
the
whiskey?
No, it's actually the movie. It was
three and a half hours. We're an hour and a half into it now before we even get to this.
Because
part.
This part of the movie was actually kind of a lull.
Well, it goes more back into what she's doing because she's become a dancer on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a Broadway dancer.
Wait a minute. This is when
they go out
in...
to dinner. She comes back to visit at the same time he comes back from war.
Mm-hmm.
They go out to dinner. And then this is the scene in the gazebo where she's. Like, mostly naked and dancing around.
He met her in New York.
No.
They're back in New Orleans.
That happens after this part.
Right.
Okay.
Because she's dancing in the gazebo, and she's like, you know, we should
totally... She makes a play for him.
That's right. I remember this now.
Totally do it.
The music's playing, the band's playing in the background, like, on the other side of the lake.
Yes, and the gazebo is moonlit and everything, and she's pretty much doing...
You pulled me from the whiskey...
Haze.
Yes, all right.
And so like it never, and like she makes her play, and like he's, I'm not into that. And she's kind of like torqued at that point, like, you know, like here I'm offering myself to you, and you're not even interested.
Right.
And she steams off in a huff, and he suddenly realizes he's just made one of the biggest mistakes of his life.
He's like, oh, crap. Okay. She was offering me sex. Damn it.
Not only that, but
wait a minute.
She was more than that.
But I think it's interesting because it shows... I actually thought that was a good character moment because it still reminds you that he's a young man and he's stupid. He doesn't...
Listen, young men who are stupid never err on the side of not having sex.
You know, he has no clue what a relationship is, and he doesn't understand the woman
the dynamic
talking
there.
Thing, and how you I sometimes don't listen to what they say. You just
this whole
follow
scene
their actions.
This whole scene
it was weird. It was a weird scene.
It was very awkward.
Well, anyway, she storms off. He's left there.
He's like, oh
boy,
crap.
I've been screwed up and. And she's going to essentially go back to New York and go into her dance career.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to go off and do his little thing.
This is when he goes to
this
New York.
This is when he ends up in New York and sees her on stage.
Yeah.
And
he's making a play.
Yeah.
He's trying to make amends
for the mistakes and everything else.
Here are some flowers to facilitate the sexing.
Unfortunately,
I don't have to do the sexing. I've had whores. I don't give them flowers, but I'll give them to you.
Yeah. And the unfortunate thing is she's moved on with her life.
Yeah, she's got a boyfriend.
Yeah. And she can't, she's, you know, kind of torn between, well, do I go back to him or do I move on with my new life? And this kind of ties back into the Forrest Gump thing where, you know, Jenny can't make up her mind at all.
Right.
To go with Forrest or to hang out with her new friends. And in this case, Daisy, you know, makes the same decision.
This movie beat for beat was Forrest Gump.
Oh, crap. What happens next? Is next when his father dies?
Well, that's when him and his father kind of get back together and reconcile. And he turns over the button factory.
Right.
And all his fortune to Benjamin. Yes. And, you know, Benjamin suddenly realizes, okay, you know, I've got a maid now. Or at least, you know, who I really am.
This is the beginning of the stupidest part of the movie. Right here.
Where he gets news from... Is it where he gets news from Paris?
No, not yet.
Okay.
This is the point where he's making money. He owns the company. His dad was a rich man.
Yes.
His dad was well made.
Buttons are good business, especially in war. I mean, they established that he made a lot of money during the war.
Yeah.
Putting buttons on uniforms.
So there was a lot of cash there. And, all right. So time passes. And then he gets the news from Paris that she's been hit by a car.
That they go through this ridiculously long explanation for
20 minutes to explain she's been hit by a car, she can't dance anymore. Okay.
And what I want to know is they go through this series of events. If this happened, then this happened, then this happened.
If it had been 1 second delay and all these sort of things. If one thing
would have happened differently, then it wouldn't have happened. How did they know any of that shit happened?
I love causality scenes like that.
Interesting, but there was no way that he could have pieced all that together.
No, probably not.
And it was ridiculous.
Well, that was basically for the audience's benefit.
Yeah, that was.
It was also a filler piece too.
It was fluff.
It was total fluff. And for a 3-hour movie, it didn't really need any more fluff.
No, it did not.
They could have dropped that whole scene out. Yeah. Completely.
He got the news, and bam, he shows up in Paris.
Yeah. She wakes up.
I would have been fine with that. Yeah. They didn't need to go through that. I mean, I can understand that they're playing with the tropes of time and
whatever,
and everything in time
and all
matters.
All the little events in a sequence of things.
The time is running out. So he shows up. He's like, "Hey, I can take care of you." Blah 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 blah. She's like, "Oh, go away."
Yeah, she does, she pushes him. Right. You know, she should more or less, yeah, really kind of strongly pushes him away.
Go home, Forrest. Go home.
Yeah, go home, Forrest. So he leaves. See ya.
Yeah.
But like, he always does the creepy stalker thing. He's always got his eye on her. Always knows what she's up to. Okay, fine.
He's like Superman floating outside the window after looking at the kid.
That was weird. That was the creepiest part of the movie.
That was the one thing I did not like about that movie.
Why is Superman a voyeur? what is going on?
Why can't he sit on top of a building across the lake and just use his X-ray vision?
Yeah.
Anyway. All right.
Not like we've been all over random movies. Oh, goddamn, Lost is starting. Not like we've been all over movies.
It's everywhere. Starting on the West Coast.
I know.
You're fine.
I started watching it before I left. Anyway. So at this point, this is where I get hazy because I know something happens in between the time that she comes back.
Well, he's been traveling the world at this point. He just packs it all in and decides, you know, he's got nothing holding him here. So he just it's where he gets the motorcycle and he packs it in and he just travels the entire world.
Right.
He's running from one side of the country to the other.
Yeah. And he's still sending back the postcards.
Right.
Every place he's been.
Yeah. So he does his travel thing, and then this is where he comes home, and then she's there. She comes looking for him.
Funniest scene in the movie. Laugh out loud funny. If I'm thinking of the right scene, where they actually finally meet.
Yes, and they're both about
and
the
they're
same
both
age.
At the oh, same yeah. age.
Yeah, because
they're both in the same place, and they're both ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back to her hotel room, and she says something like, "Will you sleep with me?" And he's like, "Absolutely." When he said that, I just busted out laughing.
And then we start into our montage of the 60s.
Right.
Yeah. I don't understand how they can condense down like almost an entire decade, but would not condense down the she gets hit by a car scene.
They drug out the car, the one moment for the car.
Oh.
And then condense the 60s. And basically, it was their happy time together.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going good.
I like that they condensed the happy time because I don't want them to be happy.
No.
Happy's
it's
not
good. Interesting. It's not interesting. It's not melodramatic.
Yeah, but that's the part of where the audience is supposed to feel good, that things are starting to go together for them. They're a happy couple.
Yeah.
They have no worries. All that sort of stuff.
Damn dirty hippies.
Damn dirty hippies, but they're having a good time.
So,
God, I hate those damn dirty
we're
hippies.
We're rapidly approaching the stupidest part of the movie.
The one that I complained about a moment ago? Okay.
So, she gets pregnant.
Let's stop right here. Let's go if you haven't seen the movie,
yeah, you
everything from here on out is going to be spoiler. We're going to spoil the rest of the movie, period.
Really, you know how the movie's going to end anyway.
You know, there are ideas, but you know what? I didn't know exactly where they were going to go with it, but the rest of the movie, from here on out, spoilers.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
All right. Go. Bam.
Okay, so she gets pregnant, and I don't think, does she have the kid?
Yes.
Okay, she has the kid, mm-hmm. and then
he lives, they're together for mm-hmm. for like a year or two.
Right, right, right.
And I think it's on the second birthday.
Yeah, okay. Some indeterminate amount of time passes, some random event occurs.
No, it was birthday.
It was birthday. And then he's like, oh crap, I'm getting younger, she's getting older. Eventually, you're going to have to raise two of us.
Yeah,
I'm leaving.
You're both teenagers at the same time.
Yeah, he's in his 30s.
30s or 40s?
Yeah, 30-ish he's periods. Like 30-ish. Okay, this is where I just completely didn't understand it. It's like, okay, I'm 35 maybe. I'm aging backwards.
Okay.
So I'm going to start looking like a teenager in about 20 years. This baby, who is 2 years old...
will be a teenager.
Will be... She'll be 22 years old. Mm-hmm. She'll be out of the house, in all likelihood.
But that just...
Why is this problematic?
Well, that's just it. He said there is. I don't want you to have to raise two teenagers at the same time.
That was still weak.
But though. That was ridiculous. Yeah. My biggest problem with the movie, I mentioned it earlier, and I'm going to slam it down now, is I lost any bit of compassion for this character when he left his kid,
mm-hmm.
period. When he did that, I'm like, forget you. I'm done with you as a character. I couldn't care less what happened to him. Like, if he would have walked out of the building and got shot in the head, I would have been like, yeah, that's what you get.
I didn't even really care for it. From that, I don't really care about that, but I was just like, this is just so stupid and unnecessary.
It was stupid, it was unnecessary, and it was... He wasn't mean.
And he
left his kid in the same way his dad left him.
It was more matter-of-factually, yeah.
It was less like so unnecessarily done to relate it to something more current. It's kind of like the whole plotline in Battlestar Galactica where Dom was like, we're going to go get Hera now. Okay. All right.
That brought this on.
But I can see that. Yeah, I can see that, though. I can still see that.
I guess.
Well, anyway,
it seems pretty weak to me.
The thing is, he sells everything. He gives Stingray. It all to her.
Stingray's got it right there. Bam.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I'm going to have another drink.
You do that. Turns alcohol. Also an alcoholic. Look at him going there.
Yeah, so he sells all this stuff. He gives it to her, to Daisy, and he just, like, disappears.
This is another thing I don't understand. Okay, you can liquidate all your assets, but that is not a continuing source of income.
Yeah.
A continuing source of income, like owning a factory that produces a revenue.
Hire a manager and have them put aside money for you as the owner? What?
It's like taking...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's where you take your departure from reality right there. Despite the fact that he was aging backwards,
this is where I was like, no, I don't think that's not anymore.
Well, that's dramatically it works, but practically no. But then again, this is the movie, so nothing practical is ever makes logical sense.
So this is where the movie is starting to speed towards its conclusion.
And speed very quickly.
Yeah.
This whole time, they've touched back on Daisy and her daughter in the present. Mm-hmm. And by present, I mean just before Katrina.
Yeah, in the 2000 time.
By this point, Katrina will hit. They're starting to evacuate the hospital. They said, you guys are probably okay, but a lot of people are leaving, just so you know.
And this is a point that his Daisy's daughter has now finally realized, okay, Benjamin Button was my father.
Right.
Because and I met him.
We hadn't gotten to that point yet, but it was coming up. I mean, the next time, the next point in the story when they come back to it, Benjamin comes back to see Daisy, and he is young. He's still Brad Pitt.
Right. But he comes back to Daisy's dance school, and he meets the now almost grown up daughter and
see, this is
Daisy's
point,
new husband.
This is the point where I think that he went on the sabbatical around the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think he went on it. Because he left with nothing.
Yeah.
He left with nothing but his motorcycle, and then he travels the world and comes back.
That's... I think you are right. I do believe you're right about that.
Because I remember, distinctly remember a canoe scene, and... I don't know that actually.
Anyway.
Anyway, so he comes back, and he's like, hey, just want to check out my daughter.
Well, and he finds Daisy in kind of a good place. Mm-hmm. She's dancing. She's not dancing because of her
injury. She's a dance school.
But she's running a dance school, so she's kind of in that... That happy place, as happy as she can be with
what she
with
got.
Being a dancer, mm-hmm. as she can be. She's got a daughter. She's got a husband.
Yeah, things are
they
fine,
have another
bro.
Kid, don't they? Am I thinking about that?
I don't think they have another
no.
kid.
No. It's okay, only Daisy.
I'm imagining that. Okay, so they have the other kid, and or they have just the daughter, which I can't remember her name.
Oh, God, Daisy's a Silk Spectre.
What?
Daisy's the Silk Spectre that makes Benjamin Button the comedian.
Daisy is not the daughter. Daisy's mom.
Silk Spectre, there's two Silk Spectres.
I know.
I
forgot about
man,
that.
I'm all over the place with this. All right, anyway. So, we're rapidly approaching the end of the movie because this was like probably the last awkward scene where he's like, hey, see, you got a husband and my daughter.
Yes, and she just introduces him as... An old family friend,
yeah. And at this point, when they come back to the present, that's when the daughter realizes, holy crap, I did meet my dad. Yeah. I have met my dad before, and it was that dude.
Yeah.
That really young-looking dude.
Yes.
My old-looking mom screwed that young-looking dude at some point.
Yeah, and it dawns on her, yeah, that he is aging backwards.
Right.
Where Daisy has seen it go on, then nobody would probably ever believe her. But now it's really painfully obvious that, yeah, he is getting a lot younger.
Right.
Then they have one more she's old, he's young bang.
Yeah, because she does come to his hotel room that night.
Yep. And then he leaves again?
I believe so.
Then the next flashback we have is them... Her meeting up with the kid, that's him?
Well, she gets the call from a bunch of social workers mm-hmm. that said they found this kid and living in an abandoned house. And the only identification they got is this diary where her name is just so prominent in it, they wonder if somebody comes back. And that's where he's almost like in his... He's almost below 10 years old by now.
And yeah. he's suffering. He's obviously suffering from Alzheimer's.
Well, he's starting to lose all his memories of all...
Very, very cleverly, they give him Alzheimer's as he gets younger, as he gets physically younger. So
does
as he
mind.
Starts losing memories and losing the capacity to do things mm-hmm. like write and you know, his anything he's learned.
It looks like
he is the right age. Mm-hmm. It looks like he knows what he should know, except that he forgets things as a young child.
Yeah, he's becoming a young child.
Right.
Yep.
And at this point, she takes him in as an adoption, and they move back into that retirement home again. And Benjamin kind of lives out the remaining few years of his life there as an ever steadily growing and hard to handle young child.
Yeah. And really, he's an old man with Alzheimer's who's losing his faculties.
Yep.
And
a young body.
One of the cool things they did was they did maintain Brad Pitt's scar
mm-hmm.
throughout the rest of the movie, and they put it in the younger actors, including the baby.
Yeah.
Which I thought was actually kind of cool. I actually got to a point where I started looking for it every time they showed. It was like, is that him? Yeah, there's the scar again.
Yeah, and our film at that point begins to end with him becoming an infant and then finally expiring.
Well, you don't even see his death scene.
Do you?
Oh, do you?
She's holding him. She's holding him when he dies.
Right, that's right.
Oh, and I'll say it. I bawled.
Yeah,
it's
a pretty emotional
scene. I teared
up.
I cried during that because you see a baby just stop breathing, and it was like, oh God, it's horrible. Oh, my God. I mean, he's an old man, but Jesus, it's a horrible scene.
Pretty freaky, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, that's essentially then when our movie then snaps back to Daisy in the hospital, and the hurricane is hitting full blast. And at that point,
and she goes to the edge of the boat and drops the thing into the water so it can be with Jack.
Or
wow,
well, the movie tells her story. No, the thing is she's dying and whatnot. We do another scene swap to where the clock that runs backwards but has been taken out of the train station. And that's, again, part of the rep and reminiscence of Daisy. And in 2000, it was taken out of the train station and was put in the basement of the train station.
Right.
But the clock is still running backwards.
Exactly.
And the last scene is, as the hurricane hits, Daisy dies. We had camera pans onto the clock. And the water is starting to
the
fill up.
The water covers the clock. And
coming
it stops.
Into the basement. No, the clock still keeps running.
Right.
As the water is pouring in.
But the clock does stop.
Yeah, after it's completely
once it's submerged, the clock stops, and that's pretty much where the movie ends. That's it.
Big Fish. That was the movie I was thinking of.
Yeah, that movie is in there too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Big Fish, Titanic, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, yeah.
This movie is very derivative of all those films.
Very straightforward too. There's not a lot of depth to it.
No, there's really not.
It's just a story.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a character-driven story, period.
Yeah.
Again, another little walk through history. I mean, it's entertaining, but if you had not watched Forrest Gump or any of those other movies beforehand, you'd probably find it a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to sit there and technically pick the whole thing apart.
Kind of like we just did?
Yeah.
I would never do that. But
we don't do that. We don't. Tear movies down in that way,
but I can see why.
You know, the movie's worth watching.
I'm glad it didn't win.
I'm very glad it didn't win. I think it deserves
a lot of technical merit. Yeah,
merit, but I don't think it by any stretch it should have won. No.
Well, if you want to look at it, it was probably the weakest of stories.
Yeah.
All in there.
Of all the movies we watched, it was the least deserving to be there.
I agree with that, even though I hated The Reader.
Well, The Reader itself is all...
Even if you don't like the story, it's an interesting story.
I recognize the merit of the movie
without
acknowledging that the story
was... I think this was had a lot more mainstream appeal than The Reader ever would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, The Reader's a hard movie to watch continuously because there's a lot of creepy stuff... And really hard to watch stuff going on there, and you...
That dude's penis?
Well...
There's a close-up of that dude's penis?
The fact that they're... I mean, she's supposed to be almost 40 and he's 15.
Yeah.
There's some creepiness with that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man.
And the fact that...
If I was a 15-year-old hung like that...
Well, that's the other thing, is how she uses... how she uses him...
He
slowly comes to the realization of how he was used.
Well, and we may or may not talk about The Reader. If Adam has anything to say about it, he won't.
Listen, if we swap The Reader out for Watchmen, we can just do Slumdog that last week, and then so we did all five. I'm fine with it. We'll just misattribute Watchmen to last year.
We should at least talk a little bit about Reader at some point. Maybe we'll slip throw it into somewhere the last else. 20 minutes of Slumdog or something.
That's fine, because Slumdog's... All right, we'll get
there. Anyway,
Slumdog's a more compelling story there.
Yeah,
I agree. Well, yeah, okay, that's fine. We'll just combine the two.
Whatever. All right, cool. So, what about acting? What do you think of the acting in this movie?
I think it's well done. I mean, it's well done as far as Brad Pitt's
job. It was okay. I liked Queenie. She was fantastic. And that was Christopher Maloney as the blind... Dad.
Oh, the blind
clock, right? That was him, right?
Right. He was. That was Master Gastineau.
Yeah, the guy that did the clock.
Monsieur Gastineau. He was the blind clockmaker.
Right. Christopher Maloney from Oz and from Law and Order SVU.
I was okay with the acting. It was nothing that blew me away. Like afterwards, I didn't get the Frost Nixon, Franklin Jella, this guy. deserves his nomination for Nixon, or
I think Queenie deserved Sean her Penn. Nomination.
Right, the side the supporting characters are a lot more interesting than some of the main characters.
Yeah,
same with Forrest Gump.
Daisy really annoyed me.
Daisy was kind of annoying.
Daisy was Jenny.
Well, yeah, well, she's the foil Jenny. Of the whole movie, so...
We went together like peas and carrots.
That's my Blanders. Oh. We went together like human and Cylon.
All right, so I think that's it. We're done.
Yeah, let's wrap this up, guys.
Next. See you guys next week. We're talk
about The Watchmen.
Watchmen. What? All right. See ya.
Goodbye.